White Rocket Entertainment.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 370.
You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the War Eagle Sports Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with TheWarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network, and by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, via Patreon.com. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
And John, this is a very big, very important, special episode we're doing this week. This was your idea. This was your plan, and I'm very excited to be a part of it. Would you care to tell the listeners what we're doing tonight?
Absolutely. So the plan for this evening is to do something different. We're going to do an entire episode where we talk about Gus Malzahn. Mm-hmm. And not just like the most recent events or how we feel about him today based on what happened 2 weeks ago, but the entire picture of Gus Malzahn. We want to do a whole episode about the question of Gus Malzahn, his future. What are the best points of support of and opposition to Gus, and how do we view those facts? So in this episode, we're going to do away with the regular format and just present cases for and against Gus. You, the listening audience, will be the jury. So after you listen to the episode, let us know what did you decide. And this is not a Gus versus potential replacement coach discussion. This is a Gus versus Gus positives compared to the negatives discussion.
Mm-hmm. And it'll be interesting to see if anybody changes their minds, because, you know, that's the main thing, is otherwise we might as well just do a poll. So the idea here is to lay all the evidence out side by side and be as honest and forthwith about both points of view as we can, because I think that, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I feel like you and I, to some degree, have earned some bit of credibility that we're not just fanatical one thing or fanatical the other. I know that people think I'm a huge, like, defender of Gus, but that was almost 2 years ago now. So, you know, we both pretty much have open minds, I think. Is that fair to say?
That's fair. And I think what we wanted to do with this episode is wait till the season was over and then look at the whole body of work and have a real discussion about it.
Right, right. We're not foaming at the mouth.
Exactly. And not based on, I don't like it when we come to the line and look over at the coach or whatever. Like that, you know, that's not making the cut for the kind of level of stuff we want to talk about.
No, no. So, and my understanding is that you solicited the opinions and evidence and arguments and statements from our listeners, and they have responded.
We have lots of good input, and I really appreciate everyone's support in this. It would have been much harder to figure this all out on our own, but people, I think, are really interested in this, and people have a lot of opinions. And a lot of people wrote in emails that had stuff on both sides, honestly.
Mm-hmm. We also have a couple of celebrity comments that I'll be bringing in a little bit later as well. Now, I want to point out that we wouldn't even be talking about this, really, if not for
Auburn Jetgate 2018.
You didn't think I could go let that just go and never play it again after all the work I put into it. So I had to roll it out one more time. And by the way, that was our most popular episode in a while. We recorded that one a week ago tonight, Monday night, and within a day, it was like over 1,000 downloads just on iTunes, so, or Podbean. So I'm sure the people listening to it on the app and all that. So I'm glad that struck a chord with folks. People, I think, really wanted to hear what all was going on. There's a hunger for news. And speaking of news, we do really quickly have some news. It looks like a pretty much a done deal as of this hour, and we're recording this at like 8:42 Central, 9:42 Eastern on Monday night. It looks like Chip Lindsay is going to Kansas to be the offensive coordinator for Les Miles. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm sorry to see Chip go. I thought he was seemed like a good guy and a good offensive coach. I was happy when we hired him. I think he has some good ideas. The RPO kind of stuff, I think in 2017 especially, I think we saw kind of the fruits of Chip Lindsey's labor. I don't blame him for leaving. I understand why he wants to go. Like, he's working for a coach that wants to, have a direct hand in not just managing, but more micromanaging the offense. And so he wants to go somewhere and work under somebody else. Now, I'm not sure that going to work for Les Miles at Kansas
right.
is the recipe. He is a finalist for the Tennessee job, but him going to Kansas makes me think that Tennessee has already chosen somebody else, supposedly. So we'll see.
And if it's Hugh Freeze, then that puts us kind of in a tizzy, I'm afraid. I'm not sure what we're going to do. But I have a comment on that. First, I was seeing some Kansas fans on Twitter saying that they were hoping that Chip Lindsey could bring Bo Nix with them. Right. And the other thing
everybody's getting delusions of grandeur.
They think he's going to come, but
I don't have facts to back this up.
Right. And so the other thing was, if Gus knows he is on the way out, after one more year, and he really just wanted to epic troll the university and the fans and everybody, you know what he could do for offensive coordinator?
What?
Rhett Lashley. Would that not just be the epic troll of all time if he brought back Rhett Lashley right now? Are you speechless?
I guess, but I'm also there's probably worse candidates out there.
Oh, gosh. Okay. All right. Well, and the other news is that Kelly Bryant apparently had a very good visit. Either was it yesterday or today? And so we may have our quarterback a little along the model of, it'll be interesting to see who we get to coach somebody like Kelly Bryant. In that case, Rhett Lashley may be the guy, I don't know. Because it kind of takes us back to the old, the old approach with a kind of a dual threat, a true dual threat, physical threat presence kind of a quarterback,
Yep.
All right. Well, on we go. We got to get into the trial. As with any trial, the prosecution will go first, followed by the defense. That's fair. So first up, we have the anti-Gus opening statements. So I pass the baton to you now.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, how much hope do you have in Auburn for next season that things will be different or better? Not just different, better. What other than the word of Gus makes you think that things will be better? A key component of being a college football fan is having hope for the future and a belief in the long term of where the program is going. And I think one of the key things with Gus is that on some level, he's taken that away from us. Our two primary rivals have zoomed by us at 100 miles an hour, and the gap is growing between us and Georgia and Alabama. At the same time, LSU, Texas A&M, and Mississippi State are all trying, dramatically to catch Auburn. They've all hired new coaches in the last year and a half, basically, and they're all trying a lot of things to get and pass Auburn. And there's real danger there. Gus had a great initial season in 2013, but the team and the program have gradually gotten worse since then. And that initial season looks like the outlier now. Gus has done a good job recruiting. We're not going to say just negative things in this part of it. But as we said before, there's talent acquisition, talent development, and then the in-game stuff. And talent development and roster management have been real problems for Gus, deciding who to recruit and who not to recruit, but then also keeping them on the roster when he gets them, and then developing them while they're here, making them better players. Finally, we talked a lot on this podcast about the expectations versus performance thing, and I would contend it's not an Auburn is cursed thing, as you have joked about. It's a team was expected to do well and underperform the expectations of the experts. And that happens in sports all the time, but it seems to happen more often to Auburn under Gus.
Yes. Well, and I would throw in too, yeah, we've had great recruiting. I would argue we've had the best recruiting classes in Auburn history back to back to back to back. You know, I mean, how many times did Pat Dye or Tommy Tuberville even bring in multiple top 10 recruiting classes? That just didn't happen. But yet, what good does it do to bring in four and five star talent when a third of it goes on and does well, a third of it doesn't, and a third of it transfers away within a couple of years? So you're really left with like a third of a team. And, you know, you look back at like 2 years ago, that 2015, 2016 recruiting class, like over half of it is gone now, including our receivers. Both of our starting receivers from that class that were so good are gone. So it's like, what's the benefit to having a great recruiting class if you don't ever enjoy the benefits of that recruiting class?
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to hear Reynolds' anti-Gus statement?
I would like to hear that.
All right. Reynolds has sent us in his statement on the prosecution side and his statement on the defense side. So here is his statement on, this is Reynolds Wolf of the Weather Channel, and he's got his statement first to prosecute Gus. And I'll
okay, here we go. Again, one hand on the Bible, the other hand raised. I promise to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. When it comes to issues with Gus Malzahn, look no farther than Jeremy Johnson. Jeremy Johnson, a player that was highly recruited, that Gus Malzahn followed through the high school ranks, recruited him, brought him to the Plains, was responsible for his development, and Johnson had some great success filling in here or there, but the year he was to become a full-time starter, the year that he was actually flirting with a Heisman candidacy, we didn't see the lack of development. We saw an implosion of a human being, an implosion of this athlete, where he became just an empty shell by the time that season was over. And ultimately, Gus is the man who's responsible for that. And there's been a lack of quarterback development. And really, for more recent examples, look to the example that has been set this year, Jared Stidham. Last year, Jared Stidham was incredible. Sort of waned towards the end of the campaign last season. But this year, Jared Stidham, there are times where he has that deer in the headlights look, and he could not hit water if he fell out of a boat. So inaccurate at times. Very jittery back there. And Gus is the man responsible for that lack of development. Look no farther than Gus. What's even more frustrating at times is he seems incapable of change. I mean, let's be honest, college football is a world that is adrift in adjustment and always adapting. It's about adapting. And hate to use him as an example, but if you look across the state and you see what Nick Saban has done, going from a pro-style offense to running something that is very, very fast-paced, much more like what Gus used to do, and running it better than Gus has in years, and having great success with it, it makes you want to rip your hair out. It really, really does. But Gus seems, well, I know years ago he was advised by a great coach, one of his mentors, that if you just have six plays, you just have six plays and you run those to perfection, maybe you build off each of those a little, make some tweaks here or there, but that's all you really need. Well, that's made him so predictable. Perfect example of that is the Tennessee game when you had Jeremy Pruitt sitting on the sideline screaming to his defense, telling them, here's the play that's coming, here's where the ball is going to go, and sure enough, watching them make the play again and again and again. It is so tiresome. When it comes to the offense, it's not just play calling, it's not just the quarterback, but you look at the lack of depth we have on the offensive line, the lack of depth of great running backs, and we're supposed to be the running back school. It's so frustrating. It seems as though the only answer to the prayers that we have are met by JUCO transfers or graduate transfers. It's frustrating, and it should not be this way. Not here. Not Auburn. Not now. Not ever. And Gus, sadly, takes a lot of the blame, if not all.
All right. So there is Reynolds' very impassioned I think frustration is the key concept there. And I think, again, the thing that really gets to me now, I defended Gus for so long because I just wanted to give him more of a chance, right? I mean, you know, after 2013 and the first half of 2014, people were ready to pull the trigger on him, a lot of people, in 2015. And I was saying, well, there were specific things that went wrong. And then we got into 2016 and it was better, but there were specific things that went wrong and could have been better. And I said, well, let's just fix those things and we'll be good. The defense is getting better and better. You know, we know we're on the right track. We got good players coming in. Let's just fix those few things that went wrong, and we're getting better and better. And then 2017 was a lot better, and everything was really rocking and rolling. And I still think that I just like to imagine what 2016 and 2017 would have been like if in both of those seasons we'd not only had a healthy quarterback the whole season, because that killed us in 16, though we had it in 17, but if we'd had both of our running backs. I mean, we never for like 10 minutes in the entire either season had both of our great running backs healthy. It could have been very much like Cadillac and Ronnie Brown out there if we could have had Petway and Kerryon both playing at the same time at 100%. But once again, the curse bit us, and we just couldn't ever get both of them on the field, if even one of them on the field healthy. And so I kept saying, well, just give them one more chance. And I think that I finally ran out of patience when we lost the 2016 Texas A&M game after that Clemson game, because both of those games to me felt like that coaching was the problem. And I was willing to get back on board last year, but you're either like happy with Gus or mad at Gus. And really at this point, I'm not happy with him or mad at him. At this time, I'm just kind of like, it's kind of like he's my Nissan Altima, right? My Nissan Altima, it's a 2008. It sits out there in the garage. It's been faithful to me for years. It's done everything pretty much I've ever asked it to do. But I've driven the thing now to the point that it's pretty predictable. I know what I'm going to get with it. I know the problems and the limitations it has. And I'm just kind of like, you know, it's been a good car. I appreciate it. I want to give it a gold watch and a pat on the back and a shake of the hand and then get something new and try something new for a while. Is that so wrong, John?
No, and I do think in all sports, there's a tendency, like after a coach has been somewhere for 5 years, that there's a natural tendency for fans and coaches to grow tired of each other. Regardless of sport, unless you're winning the title every year, that is 100% going to happen. Mm-hmm. And it happens everywhere. Mm-hmm. So some of that tendency, the psychological part of it, is 100% normal, and I get it.
All right. Do we have any more on the prosecution side before we hear the opening from the defense?
Nope. Let's go to the opening for the defense.
All right. Here is the defense of Gus Malzahn. And we start out with a statement by guest defense attorney Al Pacino.
And ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No. Because I'm going to get him. My client should go right to jail. He's guilty. That man is guilty.
Not where it was supposed to go.
Go free, then
Gus.
Something really wrong is going on.
That's not how it's supposed to go, John.
Vay, and that is out of order.
You are out of order. You're out of order. You're out of order. The whole trial is out of order.
I'm so proud. I worked all afternoon getting those into the system so I could do that. All right, so our whole trial is out of order, according to Al Pacino. We'll just have to go on without him then. So give us your defense, and then I'll throw in my two bits at the end too, of course. And we also have Reynolds with his statement.
At a time when Auburn plays one of the hardest schedules in the nation every single year, Gus Malzahn has had Auburn play consistently well and recruiting at a very high level. Because we're playing one of the two or three toughest schedules in the country every year, even if we play at a high level, we aren't going to win all of those games. And so that's the part where you have to look, step back and say, did we play poorly? Are we, or is it just that we're playing great teams all the time, and much better teams than other Auburn coaches in history have faced, or that other teams around the country face right now? And that's part of the issue. The other thing is, I think during Gus's time, one SEC title, one national title game appearance, and an additional SEC West title. So non-Auburn SEC West teams other than Alabama are 0-0-0 in those categories. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Before Gus, Auburn challenged for a national title once every 10 years or so. Under Gus, we've done that twice in 6 years. We were in the game in 2013, 2017. We were right there. If we could have beaten Georgia in the SEC championship game, we would have gone to the playoff and had a real shot. So that's twice in 6 years being in contention for the national title. I think that's pretty good. Mm-hmm. The biggest thing is 2013 was the single funnest season in Auburn football history. I mean, in my lifetime. It was more fun than any season I can remember. It was a great ride, and Gus was, you know, responsible for that. I'm not bringing, you know, in the evidence we're considering tonight, I'm not considering Gus as the offensive coordinator. We're talking about Gus as head coach. So I'm not talking about giving him credit for 2010. I'm talking about 2013 onward. But 2013 was a great season, and he brought us back from the ashes in 2012 to have a great season.
Yeah. Let me pause just for a second on that. Is that, I mean, when you said that, I got to thinking, because I've always known that there was kind of a subconscious debate, which was the more fun season, 2010 or 2013. I mean, certainly the ending of 2010 was much greater, but some of the games in 2010 were just agonizing, like the Iron Bowl, for example, whereas in 2013... That, you know, the Iron Bowl in 2013 was the most awesome game in college football history, and the like in 2013 we just steamrolled over people, like that Tennessee game.
Mm-hmm.
Good Lord, that was sweet. So the 2010 team kept coming from behind and barely squeaking out victories, even with Cam and Nick Fairley. So I agree with you that while 2010 was the season in terms of the ending, 2013 was just absolutely fun. I mean, that's why I've always said I wanted Gus to be our coach, because I wanted the 2013 season over and over and over. And I've had to basically accept that we're not going to get the 2013 season over and over. That ship has sailed. And that brings
2013's not walking through that door, Ben.
2013's not walking through that door.
Larry Bird's not walking through that door, fans. Kevin McHale's not walking through that door, and Robert Parrish is not walking through that door.
And Nick Marshall and Trey Mason are not walking through that door. And I've had to accept that. And so what that means is you've got to set aside the past. I mean, maybe it can, you know, give us some indication of the present and the future, but I'm not really sure anymore. Because when I look at Gus now, when I look at Gus in 2018 and beyond, I don't feel like I'm looking at 2013 Gus anymore. I feel like that's a different human being. And if we put 2013 Gus on trial, then I'm, you know, not guilty all the way. Give that man a raise. But if we're looking at Gus now, I'm honestly not even sure that, I mean, obviously we've said all along, can we really count 2010 as Gus because he was an assistant coach? I'm beginning to wonder if we can count 2013 because it doesn't seem like the same guy.
100% we can count 2013. I mean, my thing is, you know, people want to cherry pick the stats and cut that out and just talk about the other ones, but he did it. I mean, that's part of his resume.
But is that coming back? Are we, if we pay Gus for the next 5 years, will in any one of those 5 years, will we look anything like that?
I mean, I feel like we came, you know, we got to the SEC championship game last year.
Yeah.
And had a couple of key injuries keep us from mm-hmm. you know, in the fact that we were playing, the, you know, our third basically top, number one or top three opponent in three games, basically. Like,
That's right.
That was the difference. Like, if Kerryon is 100% healthy in that game, we had a couple injuries on defense. If those guys are healthy, I think we could beat Georgia again and go to the playoff. We'd already showed we could beat Alabama.
We were like an NCAA tournament basketball team that has to play a Final Four team and then a Final Four team and then a Final Four team to get to the Final Four.
Yes. So, and we beat two of them and lost to the third one. So, to me, like, last year was that. Like, this isn't the pro-Gus opening statement still. Like, November 2017, a scant 12 months ago, was incredibly fun. We kicked Georgia and Alabama's ass in our stadium. And I would like you to look around and see how many ass kickings they have had. Okay?
That's right.
It doesn't happen. And we did it, and Gus was responsible for that.
That's fair. All right, here's Reynolds' pro-Gus statement. Let me fire that up.
Okay, my name is Reynolds Wolf. I've raised my hand, placed the other one on the Bible. I promise to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth on behalf of Gus Malzahn. I can tell you that I have spoken to him before, on and off camera. I found Gus to be very personable. I found him to be very kind. And one thing that I think can't be understated enough is that he's very genuine. He's the real deal. He is not a phony by any measure, especially when you compare him to, say, other coaches that have been in the SEC. A perfect example I can think of is someone like, say, Hugh Freeze. Gus is genuine. He really is. He seems to be a great husband, a great dad, obviously a good grandfather. And I have no doubt that he's very passionate. He loves this sport, he loves this game, and he adores what he does. He thinks football 365 days a year, he's passionate about it, and he's fascinated by the craft of coaching. No question about that. The passion is there, and I think that stands for a whole lot. If you look at the past relationships that he's had with other players, for example, there was a Mitch Mustaine documentary that came out a few years back, and they have interviews not only with Mitch, but also a lot of the other players that were under Malzahn, and they love the guy. They adored him. And it's obvious even at Auburn, you notice the Auburn teams, say what you will about their performance on the field, but they never, ever stop playing hard. I think that's testament to the leadership that Gus provides. I think he's got great character, and I do think his players do respect him. They really, really do, I think. And that has got to stand for something. You look back at what an architect he's been in terms of some of these great offenses. As a coordinator, the 2009 Iron Bowl, to me, was a masterpiece. They were outgunned. Certainly, they didn't have the same kind of talent on the field as Alabama, but what a great game plan they had in 2009 in the Iron Bowl. And to me, that is testament. That is textbook Gus Malzahn. The 2010 season, how magical that happened to be when Gus was offensive coordinator. Obviously, you have Cameron Jamel Newton, which is definitely going to be a difference maker. But some of the play calling was just extraordinary. The Letsy play in the Iron Bowl, that was a Gus Malzahn invention. And then you look at the masterpiece offensively you had in 2013 and 2014. Gus Malzahn, amazing, incredible, and definitely valuable.
All right. So there's Reynolds with the pro Gus. So now I believe we are to the presentation of evidence.
We are.
So take it away.
All right. So we're going to begin, as we did with the opening statements, with the anti-Gus side. And we're going to present some facts and several exhibits. And then after each exhibit, I'd like for you to respond, okay?
Okay.
So the basics at the beginning of the anti-Gus side, Gus Malzahn has a 65% winning percentage. He's 52-27 at Auburn. And he's been here six seasons. In four of those seasons, we've had eight wins or less in an era with 12 regular season games and basically a bowl game. So basically, you get to play 13 games, not like the old days where eight wins doesn't mean as much.
At minimum, if you're decent, 13, and as many as, like, what, 15 or something now, which is insane.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. Exhibit number one. Gus in big games. Gus is 1-4 in bowl games.
Not happy about that.
against our SEC rivals. He's 2-5 against Georgia at a time when they change coaches. He's 2-4 against Bama. And he's 2-4 against LSU when they change coaches. Additionally, he's lost to teams in games where Auburn was clearly the better team. Georgia 2014, 15, 16, and Tennessee 2018.
Okay, well, the 1-4 in bowl games, I'm not happy about. I do understand. I mean, because what has happened is that most of those years, we've either played a better team in the bowl game, or we've come into the bowl game really limping with our main weapons off the shelf. You know, like in 2014, well, one of those was losing was the national championship game. You can't fault him for that. I mean, the last play basically against the number one team in the country, you know, my goodness. But otherwise, you know, either our quarterback was hurt, our running back was hurt, something was, our defense had fallen apart. Something just happens every year. And so it always catches up to us in bowl games because they're at the end. So I would expect that our record at the end of the season would be worse than our record against comparable teams earlier in the season. And in fact, we did beat Louisville. We did beat Washington. So we do better against bowl-type teams at the beginning of the year. 2-5 against Georgia is just absolutely terrible. That's something I'm not happy with at all. We should absolutely have a winning record against Georgia, or at least be even with them. 2-4 versus Bama, though, is as good as anybody's been. I mean, Ole Miss had to basically burn their program down through cheating to do that. And nobody else has done it. So
we're in the anti-Gus side here. Don't be woven over.
Well, you're wanting me to respond, so I'm just...
Yeah, I did.
I agree on the Georgia. I have reasons on the bowl games. I think Alabama is okay. I don't indict him on that. 2-4 versus LSU, I indict him on that. And then losing to those other teams, that's something we shouldn't do at all. So basically, I'm finding like 1.5 of your exhibit one that I disagree with, but the rest of it I think is absolutely you should be able to bring it to the grand jury.
All right. Our next one is offensive production under Gus.
Okay.
It's been a downward trend. And what we have basically is a table that shows offensive production at Auburn from 2013 to 2018. I'm not going to read the whole thing to you, but I want to tell you that we look at a few specific stats: points per game, yards per play, rushing yards per play, and then offensive S&P Plus. You've heard me mention this is Bill Connolly's advanced statistic that measures team performance, and this is just the offense. So, for example, in that last one I mentioned, offensive S&P Plus, 2013 to 14, we were 7th and 3rd in the country. And here's the rankings the rest of the time. 42nd, 31st, 34th, 47th. We were the 47th best performing offense. And this statistic takes into account who you played. It's not like just a raw number. So we were the 47th best offense in the country this year. Points per game is a simple one. I mean, again, in 2013, we averaged almost 40 points per game. Mm-hmm. It's gone down, and this year was 28. Okay, yards per play has gone down. Again, 2013 was an outlier because it was almost 7 yards per play, and it's gone down or down or down. And this year, it was basically like 5.5.
As you might guess, the numbers are all a little better last year than other years back. Before going back to 2013, 2014. But other than that, because last year was a spike, but other than that, it has been a pretty much downhill, steady progression. I mean, it's about what you'd expect out of those numbers if you just knew our records.
But why did we hire Gus? Because he's this offensive genius, right? Mm. Because he's going to bring great offense to Auburn. Mm. And if this is the production that we're getting running the Gus Malzahn offense, or we're not running it, then why do we have it?
And that's exactly what I'm saying, that I'll defend 2013, 2014 Gus, but that just seems like a different coach now, because you look at the last 4 years and even the numbers last year were not spectacular. So and of course at certain times. And it's also a preparedness thing, that those numbers would be higher if we had had backups ready to go in and ready to play when they were needed. But it seemed like we never had anybody prepared to step in. And we're not doing it now. I mean, if Jarrett Stidham breaks his neck or something, God forbid, what are we going to do at quarterback?
Well, you mentioned Kelly Bryant at the beginning of the show. What if Jarrett Stidham is gone and Kelly Bryant doesn't come? What is 2019?
It's going to be that baseball player probably as our starter, and I have a weird feeling that a discontented Malik Willis transfers, and then our super duper dual threat quarterback,
Bo Nix.
Gatewood. He ends up changing positions or transferring, and we basically have our baseball player running the offense, Sandberg, until Bo Nix can take over. That's how I honestly see it playing out, because that's the way it tends to have played out in the past, and that's not good.
No, it's a problem.
So yeah, that's all I got about Exhibit 2.
Well, and that your points about the quarterback depth chart lead into the next one, which is Exhibit 3 is personnel decisions.
There you go.
It's the exact thing we're talking about. Okay. And we'll kind of break these up so we can kind of talk about them separately. But the first one is specifically quarterback recruiting and development, identifying the right quarterbacks that we want at Auburn. Do we want dual threat quarterbacks? Do we want passing quarterbacks? Do we not care, or we just want the best quarterback? I mean, specifically the current situation, we have Bo Nix coming in as a true freshman. He's a great passer, but we're recruiting Kelly Bryant to go and theoretically go back and run a much less passing advanced offense. And then we're going to switch the 100 degrees the other direction to Bo Nix. But the very specific question is, do quarterbacks get better while they are at Auburn?
Honestly, if I were Pat Nix, I would have told Auburn, you need to have an offensive coordinator that can develop my son as a passer, or he's going to change his commitment. Because if my son was Bo Nix, right now, I would not send him to Auburn. Straight up, unless they guaranteed me that they'd bring in a kind of cut, like the guy that coached the Mannings, Cutcliffe or something. That kind of a guy. Bring that kind of a guy in. Some people have been saying that maybe Pat Nix would come in, which would be interesting.
I mean, here's a list of quarterbacks that recruited and played under Gus, since he was obviously Nick Marshall, but here's the guys. But Nick Marshall was
we transferred
again, a transfer guy, so guys we signed out of high school or that transferred in later: Kyle Frazier, Jonathan Wallace, Jeremy Johnson, John Franklin III, Jason Smith, Tyler Queen,
who elbow guy.
Isn't he the villain in Arrow? Or no? Woody Barrett. Performing well at a Mac school today. Sean White.
Smoke weed every day.
And now Malik Willis and Joey Gatewood. Mm-hmm. Is there any sign that Malik Willis is a better player than when he was when he got here? He should. Mm. I mean, Malik Willis should have fans excited about what he's going to do next year. He's been here 2 years. He knows the system. He's been developing and practicing and stuff. We should be salivating with that. But
he looks like he's regressed, just like Stidham.
Mm-hmm. So that's the first big one, is quarterback recruiting and development.
I can't argue that. Can't. I got nothing there.
And the big, like we talk about, recruiting isn't just looking on the recruiting websites and seeing who has 4 stars and going and getting those guys. It's identifying the players that will succeed in your system, but also identifying players that, are mentally tough and that can handle the rigors of SEC football. And that's not everybody. even regardless of their recruiting rankings. Mm-hmm. All right. Next one is the same kind of thing, but running back. The running back depth chart decisions, running one running back into the ground sometimes during the year, not playing others. Mm-hmm. This year specifically, Asa Martin never playing. The most specific example of this to me is, again, the 2016 Georgia game where Kerryon was banged up and we had them on the ropes and all we needed to do was run the ball and we kept throwing it and we wouldn't run anybody else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think, again, like the ability not just to identify players when you're recruiting them, but the ability to look at your own roster and tell who can be an effective SEC player and who can't, I think is a critical skill. And you look at the stuff with the running backs this year and it makes you question their ability to make those decisions. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I have no defense for the, for the running backs either.
You were really on the thing about Petway too. How we should have played him more earlier too.
Yeah, absolutely. From the very beginning. But I also feel like I feel like when it works, it really works. But when it doesn't, it's just so frustrating because it seems obvious to us what's wrong and or what's going on, and it, sometimes it just doesn't seem like it does to the coaches or whatever. I mean they know stuff we don't know, and I mean to be fair, but you just bang your head on the wall sometimes with it.
I get it's 100% fair. They know stuff we don't know, but I look at the running back depth charts at Georgia and Alabama, and I look at our running back depth chart. There isn't a guy on our team that would get a down of playing time to do one of those schools at running back.
No.
And we're Auburn.
And yet, But when we bring those guys in, they're 4- and 5-star running backs. I don't understand it.
But this is what I'm saying about the star thing. It's not just that they're stars. You have to look at them and go, can that guy play in the SEC?
Yeah.
And I think some of these guys can't.
Yeah, they're just not built that way. They're not rugged every down, bang it up the middle between the tackles' backs. I mean, Petway was our one, and it's very telling that we didn't sign him as a running back.
Mm-hmm.
They moved him to running back after some practices. He was brought in to be like an H-back and block. And then somebody had the brilliant – because I remember seeing him at A-Day and reading his stats and going, they need to put this guy at tailback. No, not for a while. Then they finally had the brilliant idea. Hey, why don't we put him back there? Wasn't that after Kerryon got hurt the first time?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no kidding. And I'm not convinced Asa Martin is really built that way either.
That's a good question. So offensive line recruiting and development,
yeah,
same thing. And at that position especially, we have been very dependent on transfers again. You look at the last several years, the best players we've had, other than the one guy, Braden Smith, mm-hmm, were guys that transferred into the program.
Yeah, from the Ole Miss kid that played everything.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we had Darius James transferred in and played a bunch. And Texas, the current guy that's from UMass playing. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've kept us afloat. The Jacksonville State guy that played center last year. So the transfers from other schools are carrying us at the offensive line at a time when we're having, highly rated recruiting classes. We ought to be able to get good offensive linemen.
I don't think that one of the princes was even recruited as an offensive lineman.
No.
Yeah.
The other thing about personnel decisions is players in Gus's offense get pigeonholed into one specific play or role, and then they never get developed or used beyond that.
That's right. I can count on one hand the number of times that Eli Stove did something other than run a jet sweep. Remember the running back we had that did he leave finally?
Devin Barrett.
Yeah, did he transfer away or something?
Don't think he did. I think he's buried on the defensive depth chart. He never saw the field.
Well, you remember, every time he ever saw the field on offense, he did the same play, caught a pass in the flat, every time.
And the other team knew it was coming the minute he came on the field.
Absolutely.
I mean, if we knew it was coming, you knew they knew it was
coming. And now, look at...
And I see your Schwartz is as big as mine.
Look at Schwartz. He's the same thing. I mean, how many times does he go out and catch a pass? Occasionally, but not much, just like Stowe. Mm-hmm.
It's true.
It's true. Anything else on this Exhibit 3?
Well, we've driven away a bunch of very good players. I mean, 13 four- to five-star players have left the program since 2013. And some of them weren't, you know, some of them were players that we needed them to leave, you know, the Duke Williams types. But some of them were guys that, you know, were good players and good guys that went other places. And I would like Nate Craig Myers.
Well, look at those names. Read that list. Go ahead and read that list. Go zip through it.
All right. Elijah Daniel, Duke Williams, Justin Thomas Thornton, Rock Thomas, Sean White, Byron Cowart, Javon Robinson, Antoine Jackson, Kyle Davis, Landon Rice, Nate Craig Myers, Woody Barrett.
That's an all-SEC team right there. Man.
I had forgotten about Kyle Davis, and he was a stud.
Absolutely. Yeah, it should have been Kyle Davis and Woody Barrett as our starting receivers with these other guys backing them up. And we still got good receivers. It's crazy.
And then lastly, in the under the personnel development is, why does it take 3 to 4 games in season for our coaching staff to figure out who can play and who can't? It seems like other teams evaluate their own personnel better than we do.
It feels like we don't even start until the first or second game. We start looking at actual film after like the first and second games, as opposed to A-Day and practice and stuff. I guess there's something to be said for, you know, seeing them in live conditions against opponents. But still, I mean, that shouldn't cost you wins or cost you, you know, like it apparently has against Texas A&M and Clemson and a couple of, you know, that kind of thing. Though, again, we did play well against, for most part, against Louisville and against Washington. So, all right, you have a couple more exhibits to get through our prosecution side.
All right. The next exhibit is in-game coaching decisions. Mm-hmm. And again, for me in the big picture, this is not a big one, but there are some very specific things here. There are very specific times when Gus made decisions in specific games that led to Auburn losing those games.
Yep.
And I would say specifically that in 2017 in Baton Rouge, getting too conservative when we had the big lead led to us losing that game. In 2016 at Georgia, we had them. We were the better team. We had them on the ropes. We just needed to run the ball and play defense. We threw the ball. They returned it for a pick six, so we lost the game. Mm-hmm. That was the only TD they scored.
Yep.
In 2016, we played really good defense, but we had a bizarre offensive game plan and play calling against Clemson, including the Cox Cat. And then we don't make good in-game adjustments to what the other team is doing.
We don't make any in-game adjustments.
It gets very fair. We almost never make in-game adjustments. And when you're playing teams with defensive coaches like Pruitt or like, you know, like Nick Saban's staff, like Kirby Smart, they're going to adjust.
Yes.
They're going to, you know, you're not going to keep doing the same thing to them again and again. You have to counter what their adjustments are. And we have a hard time with that. And then lastly, in terms of the in-game thing, I wanted to mention like...
No, we just got to do a better job of executing. That's all. That's what we hear.
Man, I didn't know we'd have real testimony from Gus in this. the other in-game thing I just want to mention is that Gus's body language on the sideline during the games, and some people may go, what are you talking about? This is not a big thing, but it matters. Like, body language of the head coach matters. He needs to be confident and be relaxed. And Gus seems tortured and like he's in pain over there on the sidelines. And he does not come across as confident.
That's true. I've never really thought about it that way. But, yeah, you're right. It's true.
But body language matters. And Gus actually talked about that when he was hired, about projecting confidence on the sideline. And I think you can see like when everything's rolling, he does that.
Right.
But you can also see at times when he looks like he wants to chew on a board or something over there.
It's been a long time since we saw the grinning Gus yelling boom and fist pumping. That mm-hmm. seems like 100 years ago now. I'm sure he did it some even this year, but all I remember is what you're saying, where he's like grabbing his little microphone and stomping around and hunched all up and then yelling at the referees and everything. He did a lot of that this year.
And he's almost like he chews gum, I think, so he doesn't chew his fingernails during the game, probably.
Yeah, or his fingers off. No kidding. He'd have mm-hmm. nubs. All right, and exhibit 5.
All right, this is our last exhibit on the anti-Gus side, and that is that the Gus Malzahn offense, are we running it or are we not running it? Where is that offense? Gosh. Where's the tempo that he wrote the book about? And we had this thing with running quarterbacks that seemed to work so well, and then he abandoned it. And the fact that we're running the exact same plays over and over at a slower pace mm-hmm. means that every team in the league knows what's coming and how they can adjust to it.
Yeah, that's indefensible. And, you know, we have never gone fast. We went fast some in 2013, and in 2014, the big slogan was Auburn fast, and that was the year we started slowing down, and we've never gone fast since then. Every season, they're like, oh, well, this is it. This year we're practicing it. We're really going to do it. No, you really don't. I mean, I feel like Gus has decided that in the SEC, it's better to just plod away and use a lot of clock and keep your defense off the field. And that may well be so, and that's fine. But stop saying you're all Auburn fast and you're going to, you know, no huddle, hurry up and all that because you know, we sugar huddle so much now, we are not a no huddle team anymore.
I mean, you could say we're a no huddle team, but when you go up to the line of scrimmage and you substitute guys and you shift around, you know, that kind of like, mm-hmm. what difference does it make if you're doing that in a huddle or not doing that?
Exactly.
I mean, I know the difference it makes, like you're making the defense show their hand and all that. But the reality is if you substitute, defenses are allowed to substitute and they're going to take their sweet time substituting now.
Yeah, absolutely. Indefensible. All right. Well, we're up to our pro-Gus defense side now, but to do so first, we have to thank our patrons for keeping our shows on the air and bringing shows like this to you. This is a special episode. We don't usually do an immediate episode the week after the game of the Iron Bowl weekend. We did our post-Iron Bowl show, but we wanted to get this one out there for you as a kind of a bonus this week. We have other stuff coming up soon, other programs that we're going to be rolling on. John and I'll be doing our traditional Christmas holiday special Lord of the Rings trivia that people enjoy every year. So look for that on our White Rocket feed. And we've got our Bond shows and a bunch of other stuff coming up. As well as, you know, we're going to be bringing you basically a whole lot of basketball coverage this year, too, because it's worth covering. So if you want to keep these shows coming and help us to be on the air and cover our expenses, then go to www.auwishbone.com and click on the Become a Member. For as little as a dollar a month, we got to thank the folks who do that already, and that includes Brennan O'Dwyer, Samuel Salvatore, Christopher Burleson, Joseph Fine, Christopher Brock, and Phil Amthor, Susan Trawick, Ben Spooner, sorry, Ben, Stephen Thompson, Chris Usher, Justin Bean, Steve Trawick, Richard Stevens, Reynolds Wolf, Joshua Corbett, Valiant Hermes, Jacob and Robin Fleming, Clay Henson, Ann Kangian, Catherine England, George Gaston, Will Summerford, John McCune, Tom Anderson, David Evers, Andrew Barber, Timothy, Steve Harlan, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, Rich Reimer, Jared Albrick, William Glenn Matthews, Joel Beckham, Theodore Gary, Shannon Butson, Taylor, David Hegler, Mickey B., Hugh Anderson, Shane Bailey, Matt Robbenheimer, Mick Vigicana, Chris Thrash, Logan Chilton, Tony Perry, Alex Nguyen, Josh Teal, David Simpson, Earl Ricks, Mike Finley, C.T. Wayne, Dave Powell, Ivor Evans, John Zavachin, Chris Commode, Aaron Pyle, Chris Wardam Wade, Jason Albrick, Randall Walker, Ben Amos, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Patrick Williams, Rob Morgan, Stephen Schuster, James Taylor, John Stubbs, Kenneth Brent Rains, Nicholas Craig, Russell Milling, Matthew Wagstaff, Joey Miller, Mark Squire, Dave Medina, Spanky, Brant Rumble, and then, of course, J.W. Rice, Michael Morton, Lawrence Kane, and our one-time donors, including Surfer Chickify. Thank you all so very much. If you want to join their ranks, we call out their names on all of our shows to thank them because they are a part of the family. They're keeping us going for all of you. and just go to www.auwishbone.com and you can click right on through to the Patreon page. Let's hit the pro-Gus defense, John. We've got several exhibits you've lined up for the pro-Gus side. Let's hear it.
So start again with the basic stuff. Gus has been here for 6 years. We have one SEC title, one SEC West title, and three of those 6 years we've been in Big Six bowl games. Mm-hmm. So, like in the old days, like a new, what you would say was a big time New Year's Day bowl game, the Sugar. Right. Now the Peach is at that same level.
Right. That's good.
All right. Exhibit one. And this is what I mentioned in the opening, that Gus has made Auburn a consistent top 10, top 15 performing team. The problem is that the schedule and the SEC have been harder than any coach or any other SEC team faces. So I want to talk about some advanced stats, and then I want to talk about some specific stats about Gus. And first, I've talked about Bill Connelly in the S&P Plus. Here's Auburn's ranking in S&P Plus. Again, this doesn't count wins and losses. It counts how well you played on a play-by-play basis against the teams you were playing against. So here's Auburn's ranks in that. 5th, 3rd, 24th, 13th, 10th, 18th. So even like the terrible, like in 2016, we were all frustrated as heck. Mm-hmm. 13th.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. 18th this year. People think we're probably like 50th. Mm-hmm. 18th in the country. Okay.
Yeah.
But that, you know, that's a how well did you play, but it doesn't, you know, then the other side is you who you had to play against in those games. So the first thing I want to talk about in terms of this is Gus versus Saban. If beating Saban was so easy, then Kirby Smart would have just lost games twice to Alabama that Georgia led 98% of the time.
That's funny. I love it. Yep.
And here's there are three active head coaches who have beaten Nick Saban in a football game: Gus, Urban Meyer, and Dabo. And actually, I realized today since I wrote that it's actually four because stupid Les Miles has a job. But
that's not
until Les Miles coaches a game, it's Gus, Urban Meyer, and Dabo are the only active Division I coaches who have beaten Nick Saban in a football game.
And that was a while ago for Les too. That was back before Obama ran for re-election.
It was 7 or 8 years ago. Yes.
Yeah, that was a while. So yeah, Gus, Urban Meyer, Dabo Swinney. And Urban Meyer isn't going to coach anywhere else anytime soon. So basically that, and I don't think we want less. So if there's some coach out there you want that can do better than Gus, you've got one option out there right now.
Yeah, but again, it's not an option. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're not getting it.
Right.
I want to thank Josh Dubb on Twitter. I'm gonna use some of his stats now to talk specifically about how tough the Auburn schedule has been.
Let's do it.
All right. Since the start of the 2013, since Gus got here in the start of the 2013 season, okay,
mm-hmm.
Auburn has played 35 games against AP-ranked opponents, second most in the country.
Wow.
13 games against top 10 opponents in the AP poll, tied for most in the country.
Wow.
6 games against AP ranked number 1 teams, most in the nation.
Wow.
11 games against top 3 teams in the AP poll, most in the nation. Okay. Damn. And then I did this math myself. Gus has been the coach at Auburn for 79 games, mm-hmm. and 11 of those have been against top 3 teams. So 14% of the games Gus has coached at Auburn have been against top 3 teams in the country. Against 44% of the games Gus has coached have been against ranked teams.
That's amazing.
So a little less than half the teams we played have been ranked in the top 25. Okay.
I don't want to hear any more about the SEC scheduling cupcakes and whatever when you look at that kind of number.
I saw this stat somewhere else about the SEC lost four non-conference games this year, okay? It's South Carolina lost to Clemson.
That's not
Vanderbilt
bad.
Vanderbilt lost to Notre Dame.
That's not bad.
Okay. The other ones were like Arkansas.
Yeah. There you go.
That's it. Those are the only non-conference games the entire SEC lost this season.
That's pretty amazing, yeah.
So, to playoff games and then Arkansas. here's teams in college football against AP teams that are ranked number one in the AP poll, okay? Since Gus became head coach at Auburn in 2013, Alabama's 3-0, Auburn is 2-4, Clemson is 1-1, Ohio State is 1-0, the entire rest of college football is 0-75.
That's amazing.
Zero.
That's amazing. Well, to be fair, we've played Alabama when they were number one a bunch. We also played Clemson when they were number one, I feel like. So those we've played more. In fact, looking at the numbers, we've played the number one team in that era as many times as all those others put together.
Yes, we played number one teams
six
since
times.
Gus has been here as much as Alabama, Clemson, and Ohio State combined.
And nobody else has even won one besides those.
No.
And I know the Ohio State one must have been against Alabama. And the Clemson one was too. So, in fact, it's funny. Ohio State's win, Clemson's win, and at least one of Auburn's wins were all, in fact, probably both. Well, no, Auburn beat Alabama and Georgia. So, well, when we beat Alabama in 2013, were they not number one?
No.
They weren't.
Florida State was number one. Remember, that was the juggernaut Florida State team.
That's right. Alabama's been number two.
Here's another how hard things are. The only team that Gus has lost to that was never ranked at any point in the season was the Tennessee team in 2018. Yeah, every other team that has beaten Auburn while Gus has been here was ranked at some point during the season.
And that's why that game hurt so bad and was so egregious is because it was such a dramatic shock, I guess, but...
Yes. And then I want to talk about, last with this, I want to talk about Auburn, like before Gus and then Auburn with Gus. Okay.
Yeah.
Auburn versus top 25 teams historically before Gus got here, they won 38% of the games. Gus has won 47% of the games.
Wow.
Auburn against conference opponents before Gus got here historically, 54%, Gus 60%.
Okay.
I think those are the best ones. There's a lot more of those.
All the numbers are better, though.
Yes. Every single number against every single category, Gus is better than Auburn's historical averages.
Right. They're all in the green.
Yep. All right. You ready to go to Exhibit 2?
Yeah.
So... the biggest thing with Exhibit 2 is about recruiting, that Auburn is recruiting at a very high level under Gus, that he has recruited at a higher level and more consistently than Auburn has ever, at a time when recruiting is harder, like when the powerhouses, you know, around us are recruiting at incredibly high levels. You know, Gus is consistently, you know, ranking, you know, around 8 to 11, basically, in the recruiting class rankings, where there were times, you know, under earlier coaches when we ranked high. There were times under Tuberville when he had top 10 classes, but there were also times when he dropped down to the 20s, too. And, you know, the class we signed coming out of 2003 and 2004 was 30th in the country.
Man, that's amazing.
Gus's worst class is 12th.
That's amazing.
So I think... you know, I mean, again, that was a bad time. But again, after that, even like, you know, the class we signed in 2008, with again, we're going down the end of the Tuberville line, 21st in the country. So, the Tuberville, the 2005 class, coming off the 2004 season, we signed the 19th best class in the country.
Yeah,
okay,
that's crazy.
Again, Gus's worst class, 12th. So I think Gus has done a really good job recruiting and building the talent on the roster. I've said this before, but there's a an article that this guy, Bud Elliott, puts out every year where he does what's called the blue chip ratio. And he looks at teams that have more 4 and 5 stars on their roster than non-4 and 5 stars, with the idea that that's a certain talent threshold. And basically, since in the modern era,
right,
you know, since the BCS, I think no team has won it that did not have, or at least no teams won it like in the last 15 years or so that did not have this blue chip ratio on the right side with more 4 and 5 stars.
Absolutely.
And under Gus, Auburn has been there every year. There's only about 8 to 10 teams in college football that had that level of talent. And that means that we're in contention to win the national title because we have the talent.
As long as we can retain it, and that goes back to that previous, but yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you if you're not bringing it at all, it doesn't matter. But yeah, at least we're bringing it in. Now we just got to do more with it.
100%. That's very fair.
All right, Exhibit 2.
Exhibit 2, this is a very simple one. 2013 was magical and incredibly fun, and it was especially fun coming off what we came through with through 2012, you know, we'd recorded this podcast in 2012, and those were the, you know, some dark days. You know, Van compared it to going back to the dentist again and again.
And
if you want to hear joy, like what human joy sounds like, go find and listen to the episode of this podcast from the 2013 Iron Bowl Kick Six game.
Oh my God!
That's it.
It is just like that. It's just pure joy, and I. So I think, again, the end of 2017 was also wonderful. Like what this team did in November of last year against Georgia and Alabama was amazing. And I've said, you know, I wasn't going to count 2010, but he was the OC in 2010, and he was as much responsible for that, what happened in that season, as anybody other than Cam.
Yeah. And I give him credit, too. We talk about him developing quarterbacks, but honestly, look at Nick Marshall when he first came in after 2012. And by 2014, he could throw the ball. And he was, you know, such a good read option quarterback. So, you know, for all that we dump on Gus for not developing quarterbacks, you got to look at – he developed Cam pretty well. He developed Nick pretty well.
He didn't sign him, but he did develop him. Like, again – That 2014 game in Alabama, that was the most yards any team has ever put up against Alabama in their home stadium.
Mm-hmm.
Exhibit 4, and this is important, I think. Even when things were not going well and Auburn was not having its good seasons under Gus, the team never gave up and continued to play hard. They never quit. They never got down. They never, you know, gave up. And I think we've seen that with other teams, other coaches, when they were out of the – you know, the title race or all that kind of stuff, they didn't play as hard. And I think this team played hard for Gus, and you could see it.
Yeah, I agree. I think they have. I mean, yeah, you haven't had a – well, you haven't had a 2012 situation either, not just because of the coaching on the field and the players not giving up, but also because there hasn't been that – at least to the degree we've had in the past sometimes, there hasn't been that cancer in the clubhouse kind of thing going on. It seems like – we do occasionally, just like any team, we get our malcontents or people that are complaining or whatever, but it seemed like it's been dealt with pretty decisively, pretty quickly. It hadn't been allowed to fester too much. I mean, I may be wrong about that, but that's the impression I get the last few seasons compared to back like 2012 or back, you know, even some of the Tuberville era or certainly the Terry Bowden era.
100%. And that's a good thing to the next exhibit, which I meant to say before this one, is actually – Gus is a coach with a high floor and a high ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is that – so the floor is kind of what's the worst-case scenario. And I think we've seen it in, you know, this year and a couple of years ago. Like, that's as bad as it's going to get under Gus.
I certainly hope so.
Well, I'm just saying, like, I think that's as bad as the team – is going to go under Gus. I think he's the way he coaches and prepares. We haven't had any losing season since he's been here. Mm-hmm. But the other side is I think he has a very high ceiling. When things are right and clicking and he has the right parts and, you know, we have, you know, again, maybe in the years we have the good home schedule, he's shown that he can take a team, you know, to the national title and give us a chance to win. So I think that's the part where – he has both a high floor and a high ceiling. There's some other guys maybe that are out there that you could say, you know, we could get that guy. Maybe he could get us there. But you don't know what, you know, maybe the floor would be a lot lower and things could be worse.
You know, I'm just thinking, I believe Pat Dye had three losing seasons and one 500 season. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, Terry Bowden had 3-8 there at the end. And I believe Tuberville had a losing season his first year and a losing season his last year. So that's two. You're right, Gus has still not had a losing season. Now, 15 was close, but he pulled it out.
That's right. So many people could come and say, you know, whatever, but I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think, again, that year you're talking about, 6-6, is as bad as it could be. Like, that's as bad as Gus is going to get it.
Yeah, I agree.
So, in the last exhibit, well, there are two more exhibits under Gus. The next one is basically that he's a man of integrity. That whatever you think about him and the job he does coaching the football team, he is not going to embarrass Auburn with his behavior, and we have had no NCAA investigations, and there's nothing that he personally is going to do to embarrass Auburn. And we see that all the time in college football at other schools. And I think that's not – it's, you know, people would say, oh, that doesn't mean anything, but I think it means a lot. And I think he's representing Auburn, and I think regardless of how you think about him coaching, I think he represents Auburn well as a human being.
Yes, absolutely. I think everybody would agree with that pretty much, unless they just can't stand him at this point.
And
finally,
the final pro Gus argument is that the contract makes it impossible to get rid of him. This isn't really a Gus argument on its own merits, but it's the circumstances around Gus as the head coach make doing away with Gus impossible, basically. One of our listeners, Bill Matthews, emailed in and called this res judica, which basically means there's been a final judgment that is not subject to appeal. And that's what that legal term means. And his point was that when he signed the 7-year contract, that was it. Mm-hmm. There's no point in having a discussion.
Do you think that he did accept changes to his buyout? There have been no information come out on that, so we really don't know. But, of course, if he did, they wouldn't talk about it out loud because then it would kind of make him look bad and look weaker, and it would hurt recruiting and everything else. So, you know, once again, here's Auburn. This is what I said last week, right? Something happens, and we all just kind of hope it'll hurry up and go away. And then something else happens, and we hope it'll hurry up and go away. And then something – and it never – it's just a steady beat. We can never make it all go away. And so, what do you think? Did they alter his contract, and we're just not hearing about it, or is that all blown out of proportion?
I'm sure those conversations took place. Mm-hmm. Where we are, and again, they cannot alter his contract without his permission. A contract is you sign it, I sign it. So Gus's name is on it, and Leith's name is on it. So if they want to change it, if Auburn wants to propose addendums to the contract, then Gus and his agent have to agree. Now, I think part of what's going on is they are trying to change things that are outside of the contract to make his life more pleasant, to make him change the terms of the contract. And I don't know anything about that other than the rumors and stuff that are out there. All I would say is that don't assume that everyone in this scenario has the same objective. Don't assume that the objective of all the people in this case is Auburn having a better football program. Mm-hmm. I do not believe that is the entirety of President Leith's objective. I think that he specifically, you know, number one, is interested in preserving himself, and number two, in his position, and number two, he's been getting blamed for this contract, this buyout, for years. So any maneuvering that makes the contract more palatable takes that off of him.
Right.
Regardless of the impact it may have on the football program, short term or long term, it may put Leith in a better position if the contract is more palatable. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Right.
So. And again, like we could spend the whole time talking about just that stuff. But I did want to bring the contract thing at the end, not because I think it's a real argument for Gus, but I think it matters.
Yeah. Well, no, it matters, right? It's part of the organic, ever-changing situation that we're talking about. So it's a key part. So that brings us to our closing arguments. What is left to say first on the prosecution side? What do you believe you have told the judge and the jury tonight that's listening to us that will make them make their decision?
I think we have been very clear about some key things that during Gus's tenure at Auburn have been a real problem. Personnel management, roster management, personnel decisions about the offense, mm-hmm. Gus's record in big games against opponents, the general decline of the Auburn offense under him, and the fact that we may not be running the Gus Malzahn offense at all. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not running the offense that he wrote about and that he ran in other places. Right. And if we're not winning and we're not running his offense and we're not being successful in offense, then what is the value of him as the head coach? We also talk specifically about some specific in-game situations where he made decisions that impacted the outcome of those games and they didn't go well for Auburn.
And I would ask the question, for all that he frustrates us, might there not be other coaches out there? I mean, because he's had 6 years. He can't complain that he didn't get a fair shake. He's had 6 years. Might there not be any other coaches out there that could do as well as his bad years and maybe have a chance to give us some more consistency and some good years? And like you say, some player development and maybe keep the recruiting about the same level but actually do more with it? I mean, is that just so hard to believe that there are no other coaches in America that could step into this situation? I mean, you made a very good case that Auburn has done certain really good things under Gus, but how much of that is Gus and how much of that is Auburn right now?
That's fair.
Okay.
I think the last anti-Gus thing I want to say is I started out asking about how much hope do you have? And I think there's a real question for me about what is Auburn's vision about where the football team is going to be a year, 2 years, 3 years from now. Where do we want to go? Who, you know, what is the football team going to look like? And do we have that? Or are we just like every year we're like patching holes? We're recruiting a transfer here or a JUCO there to slap a hole in the stick our finger in the dike and hope that it holds for another year.
You know, I don't want to feel like we've turned into Georgia with their last coach who's at Miami.
Richt.
I don't want to feel like we've turned into Auburn has turned into Georgia with Mark Richt, but with two fewer wins per season to show for it, partly because of coaching or whatever, and partly just because we're in the SEC West. I mean, I feel like if Mark Richt had been coaching Auburn for 10 years, we'd be 8-5 every year under him too.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't want him to just be another Mark Richt. I'd like to think we're better off than that, but I'm honestly not sure anymore. All right, the pro-Gus closing argument.
The pro-Gus argument is that, you know, it's 2018. This is a world where, you know, stupid Nick Saban's Alabama team that we hate, you know, is incredibly successful and the only SEC team that's shown, you know, any kind of success against them recently is Auburn under Gus. That Gus has shown he can get this team to play at a national championship level in two of the six seasons when he was here, that we've been to major bowl games under him, that we've beaten Georgia and Alabama some, and that he's recruited at a high level. There's a lot of talent on this roster. There's been a lot of talent on this roster. He brings in players enough to make us competitive for the national title, which is all we're asking for. And, you know, to be competitive for those things. And I think Gus does that. And also, again, I would go back to the beginning and say the SEC and Auburn's schedule in particular is harder than any other team plays. Again, like we're going to get into this next year. I just want to lay this out here now. Yes, it's the year that we play Georgia and Alabama at home, okay? Mm-hmm. But we are also have these things to come next season when you think about Gus and how many games you think he needs to win to be the head coach. We'll play Oregon at a neutral site. Mm-hmm. We'll play at LSU, at Texas A&M, and at Florida.
It's not an easy – that's not a manslaughter row. That's a murderer's row.
Mm-hmm. So, again, and that's – teams in the East, other teams, they aren't playing those kind of games.
No.
We're playing those kind of games. So I think everybody wants to say, oh, he's got to win 10 games a year. But there's another advanced stat site. I meant to use some of this and I didn't. But a guy named Brian Freemow does a site. He has a stat called FEI. And one of the things that he looks at is what would a good team do against your schedule? What would a very good team do against your schedule? What would an elite team do against your schedule year over year? And the reality is that under his thing, like an elite team is like a top 10 level performing team, that against Auburn's schedule the last couple of years, those kind of teams would be, you know, 9-3.
Yeah.
And I mean, like a top 10 team would go 9-3 against Auburn's schedule the last couple of years.
Absolutely. Well, absolutely. We played Clemson and Alabama the last 2 years until this year.
And Georgia and Alabama every year. And again, those were the two teams' national title game last year. And a month before they played the national title, Gus beat both of them.
Yeah. And we should have beaten Clemson both times, which cuts both ways because we should have beaten Clemson both times.
Yes, 100%.
It cuts both ways. All right. Is that... I guess my last thought on the pro-Gus side is I still feel like there's a chance that we can get it together. I don't think, though, that it's going to – I don't feel like it's going to happen because the schedule you just described, next year we're playing, you know, Oregon on not at home. We're playing at LSU. We're playing at Florida. We play Georgia. We play Alabama. That's five teams out of – 12 that are all eminently losable games. And then you throw in Mississippi State and Ole Miss and, you know, whoever else we have. I mean, I feel like if they were wanting to fire Gus, all they had to do was just look at the schedule and go, well, look, let's just hang around for another year. Look at that schedule next year. We'll have a lot bigger excuse to do it next year. Because, you know, he can't say he had to go to Georgia and to Alabama. He had him at home. But, I mean, well, yeah, you still had him, though, and you had all these others, too. So, next year's schedule is supposed to be our easier one compared to this year, but it really isn't. And I don't, you know, obviously we'll have a whole summer to think about this, but I just look at next year's schedule, and I don't see how this team, if it doesn't get a major upgrade at a couple of two or three positions, is going to do enough to keep Gus around. That's not an anti or pro Gus side. That's just an observation. I don't know that they're going to be able to do enough to keep him around another year. I think next year.
I think it's an accurate observation.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, we've laid out the information for you, and now it's up to you to make your judgments, and let's just see how it plays out. How do you want to do it? You want to have people just tweet us and email us or whatever, or you want to throw a Twitter poll out there on the AU Wishbone account to do supplement it? Or, I mean, how do you want to do it?
I mean, let's put a poll out. Okay. And try to run it for a couple of days. I don't know how can they last more than 24 hours? I'm not sure.
Yeah, but I think they can. Sure, yeah.
So we'll set up a poll, but also if you have feedback about this show and what you thought, if there's arguments that we should have used, we didn't, or there's arguments you thought were very effective. And especially like you said at the beginning, if we change somebody's mind or made them reconsider, I'd like to hear from you too.
Yeah.
So just tweet at us or email us at auwishbone@gmail.com.
We want to hear from everybody, but I think that'll be the most interesting because – you know, if you already knew how you felt and we just made you feel more of it, that's fine. But if you actually heard something in here, and a lot of this wasn't from us, too, to be fair, then if you heard something in here that made you rethink or change your mind, that's I would be very much interested in knowing that and knowing what it was that made you go, huh, well, there is that. I hadn't thought of that. I hadn't considered that. So All very, very interesting and good. All right, well, we brought this sucker in an hour and a half. I think that's pretty decent. So you ready to wrap things up, Your Honor?
I am.
All right, our time is up. We thank you for yours. The court is dismissed. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle. So what becomes of you, my love, when they have finally stripped you off the handbags and the glad rags that your granddad had to sweat so you could buy?
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.
Go to bed.